On this third day of July, 2011, in San Diego, we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, General History, Chapter 22, Elements of Material Creation. Text number 4. Srim Bhagavan Uvacha.
Srim Bhagavan Uvacha.
Yuktam cha santi sarvatra.
Yuktam cha santi sarvatra.
Bhashante brahmana yatha.
Bhashante brahmana yatha.
Mayam adhiyam udgrihya.
Mayam adhiyam udgrihya.
Vadatam kim nudurghatam.
Vadatam kim nudurghatam.
Translation. Lord Krishna replied, because all material elements are present everywhere, it is reasonable that different learned Brahmins have analyzed them in different ways. All such philosophers spoke under the shelter of my mystic potency, and thus they could say anything without contradicting the truth. Purport. The words santi sarvatra in this verse indicate that all material elements are found within each other in gross and subtle forms. In this way, there are innumerable ways to categorically describe them. The material world is ultimately illusory, undergoing constant transformation. It may be measured in different ways, just as the mirage of an oasis may be described in different ways. But the Lord's own analysis of 28 elements is perfect and should be accepted. Srila Jiva Goswami states that the word maya in this verse does not refer to Mahamaya, or the potency of ignorance, but to the Lord's inconceivable mystic power, which shelters the learned followers of Vedic knowledge. Each of the philosophers mentioned here reveals a particular aspect of truth, and their theories are not contradictory, since they are simply describing the same phenomena with different categorical systems. Such philosophical disagreement is endless within the material world. Thus, everyone should unite on the platform of the Lord's own opinion, as stated in this verse. Similarly, in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna requests all conditioned souls to give up their various forms of worship and surrender unto him in full Krishna consciousness, becoming his devotees. Thus, the whole universe can be united in love of Godhead by chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. By the Lord's revealing himself to a sincere devotee, the controversy of analytic philosophy is ended. Om Jnana Timarandasya, Jnanandana Shalakaya, Chakshu Unmilatam Mena, Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So this chapter is discussing the ways of enumerating the different elements of this world. This 28-fold division given by Krishna, which is mentioned in the previous verses by Uddhava, is worth remembering. It's kind of a expanded. Sometimes you find 24, 25. This includes the three modes of nature. So we have, just to review, God, the Jiva soul, the Mahatattva. Now the Mahatattva is often sometimes called the complete intelligence, universal intelligence. So that's where that comes in. The false ego, the five gross elements, the 10 senses, the mind, the five subtle objects of perception, and the three modes of nature. Five subtle objects of perception are taste, touch, and smell, form, and sound, of course. So this is a count of 28, and it's a good way of understanding this material world, how it's divided. Now, Krishna, of course, gives 8, as Maharaj was mentioning yesterday, Bhuma, Apa, Anana, Vayu, Earth, Water, Fire, Ether. And this just describes the way in which those are interacting. When we talk about the sense of sound, well, this is a way in which the ether is interacting with the false ego. So there becomes, sound is manifest. So these different elements, they make up our environment, if you will. This is what our environment consists of. Now, why is it important? Why is there a chapter here engaged in this? Why does Krishna talk about it in the Bhagavad Gita? Well, Because it's important that we understand our situation here. This is part of what Lord Chaitanya talks about in his instructions to Sanatana Goswami, this sambandha, or understanding what is what. Part of that is understanding who is Krishna. Part of it is understanding who we are. And part of it is understanding what this world is, or what our environment is, and the relationships between them. It's like the scientists, they know about earth, they know about fire, some things. You know, they manipulate it. They spend their lives investigating it, the different intricacies, how it works, and how to manipulate it, and so forth, for their own purposes. But does it bring them any closer to self-realization? No, just the opposite. Because they don't understand what this nature is. Bhuma apa onanovayo kung mano buddhadeva cha ahankara iti yam me binna pakatarashtada. That may is the key word. May means my. These are my energies. They're not just energies. The reductionist scientists try to convince themselves and others that this whole prakriti, this is what we're talking about, prakriti, or the material energy, is working automatically. There's no one behind it. They laugh at the idea of an intelligent designer, you know, or intelligent design. This is the most obvious thing in the world, to me anyway, to a child. Intelligent design, it's everywhere. Okay, they admit there's intelligent design, that there's design. Let's say there's design. But they don't want to admit that it shows that there's an intelligence. Because when you have an intelligence, that means that there's a person possessing it. Is there ever intelligence just floating out in the air? Intelligence means somebody has it. And they use it to make it, to design something. There are people who are designers. They design websites, they design buildings, right? Architects. Design means that from your conception, you conceive of how something is going to exist, how it's going to be built. And then you marshal the energies to make it happen, to actually manifest it. This building, this microphone, and this iPod here took a tremendous amount of design. And there were probably a bunch of designers and who had some intelligence that went into it. So, but what does it consist of? Well, if you analyze it, you know, anything here, there's going to be earth, water, fire, air, ether. Now, in this verse, it's very interesting that each of the elements contains a part of the other elements. They're all pervading. But which one is predominating? Just like in the earth, well, there's some water there, right? And there's also some air down there, right? And but the predominant thing is the earth. So these elements, they mix with each other. But they predominate one or the other. And Israel, oh, this is ether, this is air, this is water. So that's another understanding. Now, here Krishna is saying that it's not really such a critical factor to worry whether you divide it into 24, 28. Uddhava listed a whole bunch of others, 9, you know. All of these philosophers, they're seeing the same object, they're seeing the same reality, and they're describing it according to different categories. That's not, it's not critical to, like, you know, get all involved in trying to figure out, is it 24 or is it 28? You know. The main thing is to understand that this is our environment, how it came to be. How did we get into this situation where we are spirit surrounded by matter? Each of us is let's call it an organism. Organism, that's what they call it, an organism. So an organism is a living being, which is a combination of organs, right? Skin and all the other organs, as organs, with a living entity inside. You know, inside this big machine, Yantra Rudani Maya. Krishna says in the 18th chapter that everyone is riding on a machine built of the material energy. The Lord is also there. He's the super soul. He's guiding us and helping us go and know what to do from our previous life. But the idea is all of us, every organism, whether it's a little ant or it's Brahma or it's human beings. Now how did we get here? What is our ontological position? Are we eternally this way? This is all there is? You know? Do we just go around once? You know, these are important questions. Is there really anyone inside? And a lot of the scientists say no. They make clever phrases to try to put that down, that whole idea. The ghost in the machine. There's no ghost in the machine. That's a foolish idea. We can't see it. We can't measure. Can't weigh it. This is just some religious sentiment. So, and there's whole books written, there's whole philosophies, whole culture is built on that. Atheistic lack of understanding. So that also comes up in the next purport. I can't resist this, that it's Krishna's energies that make one come up with these philosophies. Yak chakta yo vadatam vadi namvai vivada samvada bhuvo bhavanti. That this is a prayer, I think, by Daksha, that it's acted from the cores of the hearts of the philosophers who propagate various views. Krishna causes them to forget their own souls while agreeing and disagreeing. In other words, these arguments going on and these false philosophies, that's also coming from Krishna. That's part of his Maya energy. If you want to forget Krishna, if you don't want to think there's an intelligent designer out there, fine. We'll give you the intelligence to come up with a philosophy where you can live like that. You know? And they're very strong arguments. It's very hard to refute on the material on the empirical platform such arguments. You can do certain things, but they're highly developed. And if they want to posit an unlimited number of parallel universes that didn't work out, and that this all the machine parts just came together by accident, so we can speculate on these things. But actually, there's nobody, there's no soul. At the end of this life, you just are destroyed. This is the philosophy of the atheists. Asatyam apatishtam ta jagadahu anishwaram aparaspara sambhutam kimanyat kamahoitikam. This is the demons speaking. Krishna is describing them in the 16th chapter. There's no real truth. Get over it. There's no ultimate truth. There's no foundation of anything. There's no Lord, Jagadahu, Anishwaram. They declare. They don't just believe it. They say it. They declare it. They propagate it. They write books about it. Jagadahu, Anishwaram. And how did things come about? Oh, just chance combination. Aparaspata sambhuta. This is how it came about. After many billions and trillions and trillions and trillions of years, this all grew up. What else is there? Come on, yet kamahoyim. Prove it. Prove that it's something else. It's like the frog in the well. One frog is arguing with another. Prove it. Prove that there's an Atlantic Ocean. Oh, I went out there and saw it. Yeah, how can you prove that? You didn't imagine it. Maybe you found a little broken bottle of whiskey and you got drunk and you saw a big ocean. Can you prove it? No. Can two blind men, can the sighted man prove to the blind man that there's a sun? No. Not according to his own experience. So the ultimate factor, the way that we get entry into this whole philosophy, so that we can eventually see the truth of it, is through faith. There has to be the impartation of faith through association so that we can begin the process somewhat blindly. In other words, do we really know for sure on our own that chanting Hare Krishna is going to allow us to eventually see God and go back to the spiritual world? How could we can't know by our own empirical experience. But if we get the good fortune of coming in contact with the spiritual master, with someone who is completely sure and faithful, and has had direct experience. In other words, this is what you have to have that. You have to have contact with someone who, there's no doubt. Every little bit of doubt is gone. If you read the second chapter, this verse is also comes up, I think, in this 11th canto, we read the same verse. That at the end of this process of hearing and chanting and purifying and learning to love God and serve Him, then what happens? Vidyate vridhya grantist. All of these material desires in the heart are destroyed. Chidyante sarva sankshaya, all your doubts are destroyed. This, we're talking about doubt. You know, the material is, they're full of doubt. They're certain about their doubt. In other words, it's not a doubt for them. They don't consider it a doubt. They consider it a certainty that you're wrong. So, but that's just a mountain of, you know, disbelief. So that's destroyed. Chidyante sarva sankshaya, chiyante chasya karmani, no more karma. Completely free of any vestige of previous karma. And then, drishta eva atmani ishvare. One actually sees and perceives the Lord within oneself and outside. So then there's no question of doubt. You saw. You know, if you go outside and you see the ocean and you come back here and I'm doubting it, you think I'm nuts. I just saw the ocean. It's there. You know, and someone who's maintaining that, no, I've never seen anything like that, then you know that they're just the stubborn fools. So that kind of personality needs to be encountered, because that certainty, and every time you read Prabhupada's books, you're encountering that. This is something that comes through, is this absolute certainty and positive understanding of things that are beyond our ken, are beyond our ability to see directly. And so that importation of faith, shuddha, adha shuddha, then leads one to associate and practice. And as soon as you begin the practice, then you're on the path to really purifying your own senses so you can also perceive. And it's not like it comes all at once, although there, you know, that happens too, that Krishna suddenly reveals himself. But you begin to experience directly some of the things that are spoken about in the books. You know, freedom from a lot of gross material desires that you may have, you know, that starts to slacken and disappear. That you can directly perceive. A certain peacefulness, happiness. Admittedly, these are just preliminary things, but they're real. Isn't anger and love, are they any less real than this thing? No. That's where we live. They're definitely real. So similarly, peacefulness, happiness, you know, freedom from anxiety, they're just as real as any, you know, wall we're seeing here. So you're perceiving that. So if you perceive A, B, and C, why not D, E, and F? And ultimately X, Y, and Z. These things are also promised. Krishna says right in the Bhagavad Gita, second chapter, there's so much about peace, right? Peacefulness, how you can become peaceful. Bihaya kaman yaksavam pumang chadari nikspaha nirmamolan hagasa shanti madigachiti. If you live free of false ego and possessiveness, you give up all these passionate obsessions we have, then you can become peaceful. Now, how to do that? That's the process of Krishna consciousness. But if you practice Krishna consciousness, you begin to experience some of that peace. So what I'm saying is that we are not also bereft of direct experience. But in the beginning, to try to convince someone who has had no entry into Krishna consciousness and who has insulated themselves with a huge wall of doubt and skepticism and atheism, it's very hard to penetrate that. The only way to penetrate it usually is like with a big globjimin or something, you know. Trick them to directly experience Krishna in a way that they wouldn't expect. So anyway, back to the analysis. Now, the Sankhya, Sankhya means counting or analyzing. This is an important part of our understanding. It's not something we dwell on at length, spending all our time simply trying to figure out what is matter, what is spirit. But it's a very important first step to know what the situation is here. So that when we see this world and we interact with it, we know that, this is Krishna's energies. And we're acting with Krishna. He's everywhere. We don't just see the water. We don't just see the light of the sun. We see Krishna. That's the whole idea. The first step in God realization is to begin where you're at. If you take a first step, you have to begin where you're at. So where are we at? Well, we're in the middle of this earth, water, fire, air, ether, the sun of the moon, the light of the sun and the moon, the taste of water. Connect it with Krishna. That's the idea. He says, the taste of water, that I am that. Oh, okay. So if I remember that verse, or that line of the verse, when I drink water, I'm remembering Krishna. You see? This is the whole idea behind this enumeration. Now, that only becomes possible, really, when we're not trying to enjoy it. In other words, we can remember it intellectually, But if we, you think, oh, let me, you know, I really want to drink a Coca-Cola now, you know. And you go and you find a Coca-Cola and you drink that and you do this. And before you know it, you're trying to enjoy that water and its varieties. Then you're forgetting it's Krishna's energy. Because as soon as it's Krishna's, it's meant to be used in Krishna's service. Right? If this is my money, then it should be used in my service. Right? That's the basic point. So Krishna says, everything belongs to me. Isha bhasha midam sarvam yat kanchat jagat jam jagat. Whatever there is in this universe is owned and controlled by the Isha. That's the definition of Isha. Therefore, we have a right as his children to employ enough of it in our own service, if you will, to survive. As described in that second chapter, labo jivete yavata. Means that as much as necessary, we can enjoy, we can employ the things of this world for our own maintenance. Food, clothing, shelter. We should do it Krishna consciously. There's a way of doing it. But that's our right. That's not a crime. But as soon as you go beyond that, you become a thief. You're using Krishna's energy for your pleasure. And that energy can be used for Krishna. So that's how that we can see all of these elements in relation to Krishna and feel ourselves at home in this world. Because it's Krishna's home and we're Krishna's servants. Otherwise, you carve a little part of it off. This is my house, my land, you know. And then everywhere else you don't feel at home. And then the foreclosure guy comes and kicks you out of that home. You're homeless. I have no home. Right? Great anxiety. But a devotee, even if he has no home, like these six Goswamis, they feel home in everywhere. Because it's all Krishna's. And they're Krishna's dear servants. And that's an actual realized fact in their lives. So this is part of what we're doing here. Is simply understanding this material world, what its elements are, and ultimately for the purpose of engaging where possible in the service of the Lord, the Yukta Vairagya principle. Lord Chaitanya's movement is based on this Yukta Vairagya, Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga, knowledge, which we're getting here, and Vairagya, detachment, you see. So that principle is nicely described by Rupa Goswami in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Anasaktasya vishayan yataham apiyunjata. Nirbandha krishna sambandhe yuktam vairagyamuchate. So without attachment, employing where possible these elements, these things made of these 28 elements, in the service of Krishna. And in this way, remaining unattached to them ourselves. It's very practical. Those who cook, who prepare the Lord's prasadam, prepares the Lord's boga, becomes prasadam. They know the principle of not to taste it, right, beforehand. Well, why? Well, because it's for Krishna. It's Krishna, for Krishna's pleasure. And the consciousness is meant to be, oh, this Krishna will taste this. He will be pleased. You're not supposed to be lusting after something. You know, let me make it nice so it'll taste good for me, right? So that's Krishna consciousness. You're employing these elements. Right? There's so many spices and vegetables and milk products and things. These are earth, water, fire, or ether. What else is it? But you're employing it for Krishna's pleasure, and therefore you're becoming attached to Krishna. You're not attached to the yogurt that you're putting in there. You become attached to Krishna. And also the partaking of the remnants is also meant to make us more attached to Krishna. Oh, Krishna's so kind. He's given us this his remnants to sustain our body. See the wonderful taste. You appreciate how the offering was made. Krishna tasted this. It's saturated with his saliva. That's also a meditation. So even just the fragrance, you know, if you want to really get into, you know, the consciousness of prasadam, read this chapter in the Anti Lila. The Lord tastes prasadam. And he just goes, oh, this, the fragrance, just see how wonderful it is. And he described, these are just, you know, ordinary spices and things, but just see the change that's undergone because it's prasadam. You know, he's appreciating it. Then he chants a verse, you know, this description of Kaliya. Was it Kalidas, was it? I think the one who's so expert at take him for Sodom. He would give this story. He would give a mango. You know, he himself was a Brahmin, but all he wanted to do was to take the remnants of devotees and also the dust of their feet and drink the water that's washed their feet. This was his meditation constantly. But sometimes, you know, devotees were brahminical, or they were simple, they were vaishyas or something, and they didn't want that, you know. They said, oh, we should be taking your remnants. So he had to have some trick. So he brought these wonderful mangoes to this one couple. They were a nice couple, married devotees, grihastha. And they thanked him very much, you know. So then he went and hid behind a tree until they finished offering the mango and eating the mango. And they threw the pits away into this, you know, they'll have this little trash place. Throw the pits and the leaf plates. So then this Kaliyadas came out and he sucked on those pits. And he went into ecstasy. Oh, I'm getting the remnants of the devotees. So clearly he wasn't enjoying the mango. He was enjoying the remnants of the devotees who had already offered it to Krishna. You see? So that you can see how eating doesn't become a fall down. You know? Eating is a huge, you know, sin creator out there. People are doing it completely selfishly. They don't care what they eat. It's just horrible. But there's a spiritual way to do it so that you can honor prasadam, offer prasadam, prepare bhoga, offer prasadam, honor prasadam, and it's part of the process of purification and it brings you closer to Krishna. So all of that is simply these 28 elements we're going through, right? We're using, as I like to point out, the deity worship, the fire, the fragrance, prasadam is there for the taste, certainly the sound is there. Our active senses, big kirtan, there's the feet dancing, the hands clapping or playing an instrument. The voice is certainly working, that's an active sense. You're seeing the deities, you're hearing, you're smelling the incense. This is yoga. This is bhakti yoga. This is, you know, the perfection of these eight. Now, the ultimate result of it is that we get out of these eight elements. We return to the spiritual world where there's the original spiritual water, earth, fire, air is there. All alive, completely conscious elements. They're doing their thing for serving Krishna. Yeah, everything is living there. There's nothing dead. So it's a big play. Krishna has created a play, you know, in one sense, a dramatic play. And also the play in the form of having fun. The whole spiritual world is all arranged as a great enterprise, if you will, or extravaganza for playing. And you know, it's serious play, I mean, in the sense that it's profound. But ultimately, it's all fun. It's all for enjoyment. Krishna's enjoyment, and the devotees are enjoying extraordinarily in giving Krishna enjoyment and relating to him and to each other in the service of Krishna. That's all that's going on eternally. Now, if you want something else, you won't get there. So we have to train ourselves here so that at every moment we want to do that. And as far as our, you know, facilities allow, we do it in our small way. You know, let's face it, this earth itself is just a little speck in Krishna's universe. What to speak of our own little efforts here, you know, for a few years we can try to... Really, we have, you know, we can't offer Krishna anything compared to what he already has. But the one thing we can offer that he doesn't have is our own heart, is our love. And that's what bhakti yoga is for. Krishna makes an effort. He's proactive. He comes here, he speaks. He's speaking to Uddhava for us, and for, you know, and so that we can manipulate or learn how to work in this world with all of these big imprisonment of all these 28 elements in such a way that we can awaken that original love and affection for Krishna. And it's not something just nebulous. It's expressed in various, very specific ways. The ways that you use the sound. Sound is most important. Vibrating, the way you use your hands, the way you use your eyes and ears. Every sense, the mind, the intelligence, memory, all of these different things. All of those need to be employed in a very concerted way for the pleasure of Krishna. And that eventually qualifies the soul, or the soul kind of wakes up And it's very nice. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhya Kavanoi Shabanadi Shuddha Chitte Kodaye Udoi. Just a little editing pastime. You won't get anywhere else. In the original translation of that, what it means is Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema, the eternal perfection of love for Krishna, is not something that has to be brought from the outside. It's eternally there in the soul. And Shravanadi Shuddha Chitte, when the consciousness becomes purified, Shuddha Chitte, by hearing, etc. So hearing, etc. means hearing, chanting, serving, remembering, nine part. Kodaye Udoi. So Udoi means wake up. Buddhila Aruna, right? It's just like the rising sun. It rises up in the heart, naturally. But what is it that arises? Or what is it that gets up? So in the original translation, Prabhupada says, it awakens. Perfectly fine. But the original editor thought that meant the soul awakens. So the living entity awakens. But that's not the meaning. The love awakens. The prema awakens it within the heart of the soul. So that's, if you read the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you'll come across that. Small thing, but I thought I'd mention it. So that prema is our original birthright. That is who we are. And really it is the final goal of the soul. Prema Pamata Mahan is what this whole process leads to. Prema. But to get to that point requires step-by-step progress. And part of that progress is this understanding. On the basis of the understanding of where we are, of what our environment consists of, we can have that increases our faith and our understanding of what to do within that environment to progress. Otherwise, we get bewildered by it. You see? Oh, okay. This is just a manifestation of Krishna's energy. These three modes of nature, that's also part of it. And we're given instructions by Krishna himself how we can work in the mode of goodness and transcend even the mode of goodness and so forth. So all of it hangs together. It's very logical. It's not something we dwell, like the Sankhyites, they just dwell on it. That's all they do. You know, the analysis and figuring it out. But there's a purpose behind it, you know, ultimately to enable us to act in this world in such a way that we can attain perfection. Okay, any questions or comments on these points? Back to Alec.
So, how do we go from remembering Krishna and the things that we do on like just an intellectual basis to like an actuality? Like, I could be drinking water and think, oh, this the taste of water is Krishna, but not actually like see it that way. So, how do you go from just like intellectually saying, okay, this? Versus taste of water to actually
by acting. In other words, it's not just a theoretical process. You know, Prabhupada made it very clear whenever he spoke, you know, the Bhagavad Gita, he would criticize it. It was just like a parlor, you know, discussion. No, there's something to do. We cannot understand. We don't have vijnan. We don't have realized knowledge in the beginning stage. But if one acts on the basis of the knowledge, just like, okay, I know that this is Krishna's water. He created it. I know it's meant for him. You see? Fine. So now I'm going to take this water, like you see me every morning, and I'm going to offer it to Prabhupada. On the altar also, the water is changed. It should be covers. You know, Prabhupada said, cover all the water. In India, uncovered water means germs get in, you know. Okay, so I'm offering it. So we don't know. You know, Krishna is acting from within as a super soul, giving us understanding. The chanting of the holy name, chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, there's no material explanation of it. There's no logical reason. You can't explain it to a total materialist how this transforms one's consciousness and then does what it does. You know, how is it different than any other sound? I can chant Coca-Cola, Coca-Cola. And Prabhupada says, yeah, try it, see how you can do it. This mantra you can chant day and night, you never get tired. You know, they're going to have another 24-hour kirtan, 12-hour kirtans, they're busting out all over now. You know, well, how do you do that? You know, can you really chant for that long? Yeah, you can. If you're, the idea is that it's a qualitative difference that has no material explanation. So if you suspend your disbelief and your doubt and you actually take part in the process, then it becomes more than just an intellectual exercise. But that intellectual part is important too. You know, okay, this is, Krishna says, I'm the taste of water. I don't know how that is, you know, but I take it on faith and go on. And for the non-devotees, you know, the academics who are studying the Bhagavad Gita, well, that's an interesting idea. It doesn't pertain to me. You know, that must be, you know, they figure out how it fits into the Hindu culture or something. Who knows? You know, that doesn't connect. But for the devotee, I understand, oh, this water is actually Krishna. And when I taste it, that's another part of the material energy. That's, the taste is one of the 24, right? 28. That's also Krishna. And I'm chanting Krishna's name, I'm serving Krishna. You see, the thing is, there's a battle going on inside each of us. You know, the material energy has for a long time covered our understanding of Krishna, made us forget. Even though he's everywhere, it's all his energy. But we have forgotten. How do we forget? We get encased in this material energy, and we use it for our service. Just like the body itself, it's nothing but a combination of these elements. And, you know, according to my will, I'm drinking this water, I'm moving here and there, I'm enjoying this, I'm running from that. What am I doing? The soul really does nothing, but he has all these ideas, you know, through the mind intelligence. I like it, I don't like it, right? And we're employing that energy, which is Krishna's energy, for our own benefit, forgetting about him entirely. And if we continue to do that, we'll go on and on, you know, for millions of births, which we have done, misapplying it. So the understanding is important, and the acting on it is essential, so that one day the realization comes. As soon as you see a flower, you think of Krishna's smile. Prabhupada said there, Krishna smiles. You know, oh, what a wonderful flower, let me offer it to Krishna. They planted a magnolia tree outside my apartment. So already I'm thinking, well, you know, let's see if we can get some of those magnolias and bring it. You know, I'm not thinking, oh, great, I'll take that magnolia and put it on my desk and it'll be so fragrant. Maybe I'll offer it to Krishna, eventually it'll get on my desk, but I'm not thinking like that. You see what I'm saying? So that's the difference. That's why Prabhupada said, you know, there's a very nice line in the Gita, there's somebody like, the greatest Vedantist is one who has a taste for chanting Hare Krishna. And what does that mean? It means that, you know, Aho Badashra Pachodo Gariya, and this is another verse from the Bhagavatam, Devahuti is telling Kapiladeva, oh, how wonderful it is that those who are chanting on the tip of their tongue, your name is vibrating, they must have studied all the Vedas in the previous life, bathed in all the holy places, performed all sacrifices. In other words, the end point of all of this Veda, Vedanta, is bhakti. Recognize the name? Bhakti Vedanta. You know, the activity of bhakti culminating in the feeling of love, you know, as expressed through loving devotional service. So those are, you know, if you just take up the process, then the realization comes. But also at the same time, cultivate the understanding. That's a perfect, that's why, you know, we have the chanting and dancing, and we also have this class. Very important. Those who just want to chant and don't want to read Prabhupada's books or hear any philosophy, it's bogus. It's called sahajiya. Oh, we don't need no philosophy. We got Radha and Krishna. Yeah, right. That's not the way it works.
That was just on a different point of view.
Go ahead.
You're describing the pastimes of Kalida.
Yeah.
How he was worshipping the devotees by taking remnants and actually by doing service for them.
Right.
Eventually he was rewarded big time.
Yeah.
He actually got the mercy of Mahaprabhu, the water
director. Right.
It's actually a very instructive story that by, you know, serving and worshipping the devotees, you actually get the...
That's a very good point. Thank you. Yes, just like it said, well, we, you know, in order to get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, you have to get the mercy of Lord Nityananda. And Lord Nityananda is the representative of the Guru, you know. And in one sense, all of the devotees are also gurus. They're also instructing us. So serving the devotees, serving the guru, enables us to get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. And that reminded me of another thing. Thank you for reminding me. There's a wonderful verse by Swarup Damodar Goswami when he rejoins Lord Chaitanya in Puri after Lord Chaitanya's South Indian tour. He went, as soon as he took sannyas, he tried to go to Vrindavan. He ended up going to Puri, but shortly thereafter he left for South India on a tour where he met Ramananda Roy and many other pastimes. And after 2 years, right, he came back to Puri, and it was this, you know, super emotional reunion. All the devotees had been bereft. And so he comes back there, and Swarup Damodar, who had also kind of gone mad in separation, he had gone off to Varanasi, and he didn't take sannyas, actually. But he kept his name. So he rejoined Lord Chaitanya, and he would become a very intimate secretary, as you know. So he chanted his verse, and it pertains to exactly to this. So it's about the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. And you can listen. One of the words that means mercy is daya. So this word appears in this verse 12 times, the new record. Helo dun deke daya, shadaya promilaya o daya, samyat shasta bavadaya, vasadaya chittar paton madaya, shaswat bhakti minodaya, samadaya madhurya maryadaya, shri chaitanya dayanide, tabadaya bhuyara mandodaya. So this is a prayer to Lord Chaitanya. He's right there with Lord Chaitanya, offering his obeisances, Swarup Damodar, and he's chanting this verse. Please shower me with your mercy. So what's the effects of the mercy? There's a nice purport here, quoted from Bhaktisiddhanta. Helo dhunita kediya. First, mercy, it destroys all of your difficulties, miseries. Helo dhunita kediya vishadaya pronmila damariya, by causing the heart to jubilate, pouring down so much nectar. And then samyat shasta vibhadaya vasadaya, it reconciles. If you're arguing from different scriptures and everything, it reconciles all those arguments. Just like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he was expert at this nyaya. Nyaya is logic, back and forth, tarka. So he became, he gave that all up within mercy. Samyat shasta vibhadaya vasadaya chittarpaton madaya, by filling the heart with nectar. Shashvat bhakti vinodaya. It stimulates a devotional service at the highest levels, prema bhakti, madhurya ras. Please let Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, O ocean of mercy, please shower your mercy upon me. So we can study this first. But the idea that for those who get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, all of this arguing back and forth, 28, 9, 6, and all this, it's resolved. This result, and understands that if we want to apply your logic, apply it to the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. That's in the Adi Leela. Very nice. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Sorry for going over. Yeah, I'm going to get off. I'm sorry. I'm holding you up. I really don't want to do that. I forgot to take these.
It's beautiful. Take them. You got your flowers on your desk.
Yeah, really. What are you doing here? You have a big festival?
No, I don't get your hopes up.
He's going to write the second initiation.
You going up to Lagoon?
Today, yeah.
Yeah, I'm wondering if there's going to be anyone at the feast tonight.
Anyone? Oh, yeah. I mean, traffic is horrific. It took me 6 hours to get here yesterday from San Barbara.
Really?
Yeah, tomorrow is the 4th of July.
Yeah, so it's a late. I don't know.
Yeah, I was
going to give myself 3 hours to get there.